This is a HeadGum Podcast.
We always battle hard, but we always stay friends. Because we all love Pokemon.
Pika Pika!
In 86, Anna Martin wrote the first book of what became a cult. Now it's time for Babysitter's Club.
Did you know that Tanner very often calls me Josh during our records?
Oh, wow. No, I did not know that. Fun fact.
Yeah.
I've gotten a couple of Jacks before. So
you got a couple of Jacks?
It's okay. Confusing where we both have J's, four letters.
In the throes of passion, you know?
Right. Yeah.
The real crime, though, was recently, just in the, it had never happened before, and I didn't know what he meant, but he referred to our listeners as the bug catchers.
Oh, yeah.
But now that's technically true, because we are speaking to some bug catchers and some members of the Baby Nation all at once.
Yeah. And he is also, actually, he's used the, I discovered this. Because he did it, but he closed one of our episodes with "I love you and I kiss you."
That's nice.
I was like, "Oh, you know what? I love you too, Tanner." And then I was like, "Wait a second, that's a sign off, isn't it?"
That sounds too much like a catchphrase. Yeah. But no, it's genuine. When you don't say that to someone unless you genuinely mean it—that you do love and indeed also kiss them.
Right.
So you can take that as being heartfelt.
We love and kiss both Baby Nation and the Bug Catchers.
Perhaps we should say what is happening here, because
probably
lots of people are probably confused.
Yeah, with the cold open.
There's some like very interesting cross section of people who maybe know exactly what's happening, but find that deeply confusing because it's like the right guys, but the wrong guys somehow.
It's like 50-50 in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Well, where do we start?
And also, I want to say up front, if you listen to Experience Share, or if you listen to Baby Nation only and exclusively because you're like a big fucking Tanner head,
yeah,
this is not the one for you.
No, it's going to be a miss. It's going to be a miss.
So what are we calling this? I've been referring it to in my head as the Pokesitters Club, which is the name of a fan fiction that you and I at least kind of skimmed.
Yeah, I'm seeing that now as well. I was trying to workshop it in the email, and I was like, oh, is it Babysitter's Experience Share Club? Or Babysitter's Experience Club? Something there. They're both
The Babysitter's about... Experience is pretty good.
Babysitter's Experience is pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, and then the listeners are called the Baby Catchers.
Baby Catchers. Now, that's good, yeah.
And now we're getting somewhere.
They're falling from the sky, yes.
Hello and welcome to the Babysitter's Experience. I am Jack Shepard.
And I am Josh Fjellstad.
And it's a crossover episode between two podcasts. One is called Experience Share.
Yeah.
And one is called the Babysitter's Club.
And they were both abandoned by their other co-host, Tanner Greenring. And so
not permanently.
We had no choice but to join forces once again, although Jack and I also go way back.
Yeah, Tanner was like, Tanner's just like immediately gave up. Tanner had a crisis of work and daycare that came together in a pretty epic fashion. And he was like, there's nothing that can be done.
Yeah, it's not quite a nonchalant abandoning. It was for good reason, I suppose.
But we stepped in to save the day. And I think you're going to be hearing this in both feeds.
Yes.
That's cool. I think that's cool.
It's fun. It's like it's a feed the first drop. Time I've ever done such a crossover.
It's a power move.
Cross promo.
Yeah. And what we're going to be talking about today is, I'm in the driver's seat on the Babysitter's Club.
Oh,
who's
yeah.
in the driver's seat on Experience Share?
Tanner is, usually.
Okay, so this is fine.
Yeah, this works. He kicks it off. And it's interesting. I don't really know how we fell into that because I'm in Experience Share. I'm the Pokemon master, the Pokemon expert, and I played a lot of the games. I mean, for the majority of my life, have been a fan. And Tanner's the Pokemon newbie, And right. yet, I think initially it was because he had more podcast experience, because Babysitter's okay. Club has been around several years longer than Experience Share. I was like, just, you know, let it ride.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you were always a Babysitter's Club fan, and that's how you fell into the driver's seat.
It's so far back in time, but that was the initial premise.
Okay.
That was like the first episodes, if you go back and re-listen to them, like the setup is very much like, I used to read the Babysitter's Club books, and this guy right, okay. is experiencing for the first time. But Tanner's probably now, I would say, one of the world's foremost Babysitter's Club scholars.
Oh,
it just like the bit doesn't work anymore. The man knows his stuff.
Right.
But so what the format that we have for this week, I think to ease people in, because this is going to be difficult, especially for the Tannerheads. Tannerheads, if you're still with us, we salute you. Well, I don't know if I want to salute someone who's like exclusively a Tannerhead.
Yeah.
But thanks for sticking around.
A little deranged.
To ease us in, we'll do a tight minute on something I found that is the only existing document that brings our worlds together.
Wild.
It's wild. And somebody did write a fan fiction called The Pokey Sitters Club. And the person who wrote it is named Russian Blue Witch.
That sounds right.
And it sounds like she had some help from her sister, Storymaker the Echidna. And we had a little bit of a pre-pro chat before we got on here, and you admitted to me that you did not indeed.
No, I was so enraptured by the Babysitter's Club book that I read earlier today that I couldn't pollute the lore.
Yeah.
And I forgot, although I'm now scanning. I've been scanning it now. So
good. So that scanning is fine.
The literature.
I can only describe this story as upsetting and unreadable.
Yeah. And it's like, it should be better than it is. The plot should make more sense because there are actually daycare centers in Pokemon games
right.
where you will deposit your Pokemon and people will take care of them and they gain experience. So it would make sense, actually, that this yeah. would be a business, you know? Like, it should be more, I guess, straightforward. But when is fan fiction straightforward?
The premise is sound. The premise is sound. And I think maybe what you and I are experiencing is I appreciate when someone makes the effort. Someone had some fun with this. They made a nice thing. It sounds like mm-hmm. they made it for someone who's possibly a big Pokemon and Babysitter's Club fan. I don't want to malign them, but I did find it very difficult to follow. But maybe if by the end of this, once you and I have merged as one Babysitter's Club Pokemon expertise entity, will be able to come back and understand it, because there's a lot of stuff
That's
I
true.
Didn't get, but it was mostly, I think, Pokemon stuff. But I will briefly describe it, because we also experienced a Pokemon universe thing and a Babysitter's Club thing, which I would like to talk about.
Right.
The plot, I think, is that what if they need a Babysitter's Club to look after Pokemon?
Exactly. Yeah. It starts there, and that
makes
sense.
And it's something that's interesting to think about, isn't it?
Yeah. And like I was saying, like that's a thing in Pokemon, so, and it's a thing in the real world. Obviously, people need to be babysat. So
yeah,
that makes sense. But there are a couple of narrative choices that are a little confusing.
It was confusing. I do recommend, and in fact, it's required, that everybody who listens to this read that entire Pokesitters Club on fanfic.net.
Yeah.
But I found it difficult to follow. And we'll leave it there. Maybe we'll come back and revisit it after you and I have kind of done a little bit of mind share here. We've experienced together something from the Babysitters Club and something from the Pokeverse.
Right.
And the thing that I chose is a classic, one of the great classics. It's kind of an interesting... I'm interested to hear you describe it with your virgin lips, if I may use that phrase.
You may, yeah.
It's a classic Babysitter's Club book, but it's really getting thrown into the deep end. It's a book that is called Stacy and the Bad Girls, Babysitter's Club number 87. It is, mm-hmm. It's one of the most famous Babysitter's Club books. And
really?
I imagine you must know why. My God. Is this your only experience with the Babysitter's Club?
it is, and that's why the virgin lips were correct. I'm yeah. obviously familiar with the franchise, but I had never read any of them. So I actually thought that it was a pretty good choice because it has a lot of summary of, like, the backstory of the Babysitter's Club, like how it was founded. But I presume that, and maybe I'm leaping ahead, but I presume that the reason that it's so pivotal and, like, noteworthy is that it's about, like, a break with the Babysitter's Club. Great divide.
It's pivotal and noteworthy because it is a book about crimes and criminality. And I imagine you must think that these girls are all crime girls.
Yeah,
based on your one experience.
Crime doing is not typical in the Babysitter's Club world. They're usually
not until
not getting their hands dirty.
This is this sort of exiting the Garden of Eden book here, where the ultimate sin of, and everybody knows that the ultimate sin is to sneak a bottle of wine into a You For Me concert.
Yes,
is finally committed here, and it's in some ways it's probably a punishment because, as I'm sure you noticed from the text, Stacy has left the club in previous books.
Right.
So it's during this sort of interregnum between Stacy being out of the club and being grudgingly admitted back into the club. My God, what a novel. What I would love is to hear your virgin lips describe it to me and say what happens in it.
Okay.
I want to hear it from you. Say who are these girls? What are they doing? Why are they committing all these crimes? What happened?
I mean, we didn't get, maybe you get it in another book, which I'm definitely going to be curious to hear about. Like, you know, how did they turn into bad girls? That's unclear. Unclear to me. I get that. They're just trying to have a good time. I mean, who is it, you know?
Who? Stacy, Jackie, Mia, Andy, Heather, and Sheila?
Yes. And Sheila, Mia, Jackie, and Heather are the Fabulous Four, I think. Stacy referred to them as that at one point. Maybe
okay.
It was like one time, and I was like, wow, I don't know where this nickname is coming from.
Yeah.
So the book opens with Stacy being on summer vacation, I believe.
Right.
And because she's no longer part of the Babysitter's Club, she has no income and she doesn't have enough to do.
And she can't get babysitting jobs outside. Babysitting basically owns Stony Brook. So if you're out of the club and you call up like Mrs. Pike and you're like, hey, do you need babysitting for your 7 fucking children? Miss Pike is like, if this is not through the big babysitting conglomerate over at Claudia's house, I'm not interested in hearing from you, Stacy.
We're no union busters here.
Like, yeah,
you gotta
exactly.
be unionized or I'm not talking to you.
Yeah. So she can't get work and she needs the money to buy clothes.
And she is dating a fellow named Robert.
We call him Brew Doggy.
Brew Doggy. I saw that at one point too and I was like, who's Brew Doggy here and why?
His name is Robert Brewster.
Okay.
So naturally, his bro friends call him Brew Doggy, and I consider myself one of his bro friends.
And is he 13 as well? I think Stacy's 13 in this. Is that right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
And Martin likes to keep
these
girls
this cool.
eternally 13. They repeat the 8th grade over and over again. It's like part of the Babysitter's Club, the Sitterverse.
Okay. That was going to be one of my questions, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, then you're a sharp reader if you picked up on that in one book.
I was like, I'm having a little trouble. Like, it explicitly at one point says 13. And I was like, okay, I'm having a little trouble picturing how old everyone is here. And I was like, maybe Robert is like a sophomore or something. Okay, so they're all 13.
Yeah, everyone's 13.
All right. So the reason that Stacy, from what I understand, the reason that Stacy was kicked out of Babysitter's Club was basically, if she says it's like a mutual decision, which we've all been there, we're like, I have to leave, but also like obviously these people are telling me I have to go. where she started dating this dude, Robert, Brew Doggy,
please. Yeah.
And she fell into his group of friends, which is this Fabulous Four, and then a few
and they're criminals
folks. These criminals.
Yeah.
And the Babysitter's Club leadership, which I understand is namely Christy Thomas, is the president.
Hell yeah.
Founder.
That's right. Yep.
Okay. And then Claudia Kishi?
I would say Kishi.
Is it Kishi?
I would say Kishi. Yep. Mm-hmm.
We pronounce names of like every Pokemon wrong all the time, so I'm used to mispronouncing things. So that's okay. Going to be a thing in this crossover. And Claudia is the VP.
Yeah, because she has a phone
number. And also still friends with Stacy.
It's strained.
It seems strained.
The friendship is strained. Stacy fucked up. Let me ask you this question. Here's a question for you. And I want you to answer honestly.
Of course.
Did you like Stacy?
I don't know that I loved her. She seemed a little bit like a goody two-shoes.
Okay. She just seemed like a goody two-shoes?
Well, she seems conflicted.
Commits wine crimes at a concert with cigarettes?
Well, but she's the rat. She's like calling them all out on it. And she doesn't indulge.
Yeah.
I guess we don't know because the security guards end up catching them.
She never has a chance.
So we don't know if she would have just been like, all right, whatever. Like, I don't love this, but it's fine.
Yeah.
But I liked her. What I admired about Stacy is that she has a go-getter attitude.
Yeah, that's for sure.
She's like bored during the summer. Like, she doesn't want to just hang out. She has a few days in the beginning of the book where she's just like watching concert videos of... what is it? M for
you for you, me.
You for me, yes. And she's like bored after a couple of weeks and she's like, I'm gonna get a job because she's bored. And I like that. I like that ambition.
It's good.
I feel like she could loosen up a little though.
She could.
You know, we don't need to be criminals, but there's a few steps before criminal that you can like have a little fun.
So you don't want to be Jacquie.
No, certainly not.
That's on the far end of the spectrum. That's like Arkham Asylum shit. She's sneaking wine into fucking You For Me concert. She's smoking cigarettes, explicitly smoking cigarettes.
Oh my God.
And shoplifting from Bel Air's. But then on the other side, you've got Stacy, who is what we in the business, we call a crime beard or a wine beard.
Oh, wow.
Because she's basically just being used by Jacquie and her friends.
Right.
As like, oh, look at this good girl. Don't search our bags when we go into the concert. We're hanging out with a wine beard.
Wine beard is really good.
Yeah. It's a technical term in the babysitters community.
That's good to know. So that's a thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the other part I didn't, as being a New Yorker currently, and you know, you've also lived in New York for several years. So
yep.
I liked that Stacy's mom has got it going on. Stacy's
Maureen,
mom.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. You're right. Your instincts are correct.
Kind of chastises Stacy at the end for like not being able to read these people. She's like, you're from New York City. Like, you should always know when someone is using you, and don't be a chump because we're not chumps when we're from the city.
Yeah.
And that's like sort of the lesson. And Stacy was sort of like, she had to learn the hard way, unfortunately.
Sometimes you have to, and it throws her back into the willing arms of the Babysitter's Club.
Right.
And so the novel ends with Stacy at an awkward but active Babysitter's Club meeting.
I'm curious if there's a lot of other plot points that we could talk about. I am curious, though, were there multiple books, like how much time goes on where Stacy is in this interregnum period where she's like not in the Babysitter's Club, and is this like, is it smooth sailing after this one and the great divide is bridged again, or is it still rocky?
Stacy is a permanent, this is fucking great stuff, and these are great questions. Stacy is a permanent wrench in the goddamn works.
Oh wow.
So she just like, she's always got one fucking foot out the door. You know, if it's not Brew, so this happened over Brew Doggy.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently she can't date her fucking basketball boyfriend and sit some babies at the same time.
Apparently not. That's too
apparently not. So she's late to meetings and she like blows off clients and it's like, it's a fucking disaster and they kick her out. But
her
like,
whole thing is my boyfriend now.
It's that my sucks. Boyfriend now.
That always sucks.
Yeah. And so Stacy's like, the core of the club is Christy, Marianne, and Claudia. And then Stacy's like the new girl. This is in like book one.
Oh, wow.
But that dynamic is kind of always there. Even though the more members join, Stacy's always like 1 foot in and 1 foot out. Tanner and I are not fans of Stacy.
Okay. So I answered correctly when I was like, I don't really love her.
No, no. She's not. Like, here, so they say, so the lesson of this novel, and it comes at the end, Stacy has written what friends are like. And friends are smart, funny, cool.
Sure.
A fabulous dresser, someone who likes to shop.
It's a little arbitrary.
A good listener.
Yeah,
someone who
good.
Makes me feel good, and someone I enjoy making happy.
That's nice.
Yeah, and that's not Stacy, and it's not these crime girls, and that's the lesson. And it's beautiful, and it is a beautiful novel, and it is one of the greatest Babysitter's Club books. It's written by a man named Peter Laranges.
Oh, wow. Well done, Peter.
Yeah.
It had more depth than I thought it was going to.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. So we've basically, folks, you ought to read it, but that's the plot. They go to a You For Me concert with these bad wine crime girls and they get caught. And mm-hmm. Stacy learns that sometimes your true friends are the fucking Babysitter's Club and not these other girls. I want to ask you a question about the B plot.
Go for it.
And I want to start this way. What did you think of the babysitting? How did you feel about the babysitting? Because there's a lot of babysitting in the book, isn't there?
I had a couple of questions about this. So it was Dawn and Marianne, I think, are kind of alternating on this B plot of babysitting.
Yeah.
But it's set up at, and so you mentioned Marianne previously. Is Dawn a main character as well?
Yes, she's a babysitter. She's one of the seven. Yeah.
So the subplot here that gets introduced, and it's in a great bit of narrative here, it finally all comes together in the penultimate chapter, how these two stories connect.
This is Peter Laranges.
Peter, wow. Masterful storyteller.
Yeah.
So Dawn's mom has remarried, and...
She is remarried Marianne's dad.
Oh, that's their... Okay, so that's why they are together as well. Okay.
Yes.
So they find out that Dawn's cousin, Amy, who is her cousin's daughter, I think.
She's nobody. She's never in it again. Her parents are never in it again. She's nobody. She's just
like
Amy.
A nobody.
She's
in
just
this
a kid.
Story,
she's
too.
A device. Yeah.
Richard is asked to go on business with these cousins.
Yeah.
So they're like, hey, Dawn and Marianne, can you take care of Amy for two fucking weeks
for free?
Yeah. Like, so that's my first question. I think it's implied that the Dawn's mom is around the whole time, and I'm forgetting what her name is.
Sharon.
I believe Sharon is around the whole time, but either way, 13-year-olds taking care of a 7-year-old for 2 or 3 weeks is pretty bold. That's not much of a age difference.
I mean, they are the best in the business. They're the best in the business.
Okay,
it's literally
so they've
the
got all their
club.
References.
The CPR certified.
Yeah.
Just it's like Malcolm Gladwell. They've done thousands and thousands of hours of good, clean babysitting. Yeah, they know what they're doing.
And what do they get out of that time? Like, they never mention the payoff here, but that's got.
I don't
be
think they're being paid
a lot.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, they're doing it for free?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I think it's it may be left open ended. It may be left open ended, and they may also just be in the thrall of this kind of scary girl. Because there's a scene, the girl is bad.
Yeah, Amy's bad.
She is not having a nice time. No.
No.
And she, there's a scene where Claudia is trying to get her to come out of her shell. And she's why don't you draw a picture about how you're feeling? And the thing that Amy draws is this fucking horrifying, just dark void that's clearly in the center of her. It's here, I've got the passage here. An enormous scaly creature with bloodshot eyes. It was holding something that looked like a banana. Two stick figures were below the banana, floating with umbrellas like Mary Poppins. Claudia's heart went out to Amy. Whoa, scary. What's the creature holding?
A train. It's going to London, and the creature is picking it up and squashing it.
And two people escaped?
Yeah, that's my mom and that's my dad.
Jesus.
She pointed to the area beneath the monster. And that? That's Stony Brook.
This. Amy doesn't need a babysitter. Amy needs a therapist.
Yeah. Yeah, or a fucking exorcist.
Yeah.
This is a dark child, and this happens sometimes in the series. They've introduced this sort of, like, dark child, and then I think we're probably, if we were better readers of these texts, we would just, like, recognize the dark influence of this dark child throughout the rest of the series, but she's never mentioned by name again.
Right.
And I'm realizing we're going to have to go back and read all these books again, because we miss so much. And there's only 300 of them.
Only.
And I am at a point where I've read a few of them more than once.
It was a pleasant read. I mean, I cleared it in about an hour.
It's so good.
You just kick back. Pretty
nice. Let me ask you, we're going to try to keep it fairly segment light in this portion, but sure. This is a segment that we do like to call Vibe Check.
Oh, I love a vibe check.
There's cool music happening behind it when I said that, so it sounded cooler to listeners than it sounds to you. So vibe check is when we figure out what the guys are. And here's the vibe check that we're going to find out what they are is you for me. Mm-hmm. What are they in real life? What band is this? What is it? Because I don't think it's a boy band. It's not like Backstreet Boys.
It's really confusing to me. And this touches on what my main question was going to be. And it also relates to Amy's story. So,
okay, perfect.
When Dawn is preparing for Amy to come and stay with her for 2 or 3 weeks, she goes into Jeff's room, which
that's
I
her brother,
presume is brother, yeah. And she's like, I got to make it all good for like a 6-year-old or whatever.
Yeah.
And she points out that there's like Darth Vader sheets and a Red Sox poster. And she needs to cover up all that stuff because that's not going
right.
to, apparently that's not going to be very gendered. That's not going to be good for a 6-year-old. Okay.
Yeah.
6-year-old girl. And then, so for You For Me, this group, I think is identified as being a grunge band.
Here's the passage.
Okay.
This is important. Yeah. Mom calls me a grunge sponge, says Stacy, and You For Me isn't really a grunge band. They just sing the best songs. So what I'm getting from that is that they're not grunge. It's not like fucking like weird post Nirvana. It's not like Nickelback.
Okay.
But
that's what I was curious about.
It is something that like a lame parent would think is grunge and in the know kid would say isn't really grunge. So you wouldn't say of the Backstreet Boys, for instance, or NSYNC, which like the name makes you think it's going to be NSYNC. But it's like, you wouldn't say they're not really a grunge band. You know, that's not how you would describe them. That's what I think. That I'm just trying to get cues. And the guy's name is Skylo, which is like
Skylo.
A little edgier than like J-Rock or something, you know, like which would be a boy band name.
Right.
That could be both you or my boy band name for what it's worth.
And is the setting, what I'm trying to figure out is like, this is the one of the books in the 90s. Was this, you know what year it was?
I think it's probably early 90s, yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, why is grunge even, you know, part of the discussion? Okay, so it's in the 90s. It's very confusing because You For Me also, like at the concert, Skylo comes down onto the stage, like from the air, from the sky.
Right.
Low. And
cool. That's cool.
Surrounded by fog and everything, which is very boy band.
Yes.
So, but then it's some kind of, it's in the rock sphere. So it's definitely not a Backstreet Boys or an NSYNC.
She describes it as my current fave rock group.
Are they like Train or like?
Okay. See, that could work, but it's for for teens. Like, I don't know if Train has like tween.
No. Yeah. For 13-year-olds. Yeah.
Let me throw something out at you and just. If you don't like it, it's fine.
All right.
MCR.
Oh. Wait, did they start in the 90s?
No.
I mean, or is this... This
no,
is just
but it's like
equivalent.
An MCR-esque band.
That makes more sense to me.
It's something like that.
Yeah, like a Panic at the Disco.
You know, it's like melodic and it's rock, but like, yeah, there's a lot of eyeliner and it's a little bit edgy.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah.
And like to these girls, they'd be like, yeah, this is grungy. This is the hard stuff.
And they're like bad. The guys are bad. There's like a, they're, they, apparently they like skipped out on their last tour. Because they, like, couldn't be fucked. And, like, Jaqui is, like, they're so cool. They, like, don't care about regular stuff. And it's like, Jaqui, I get that you think that. But when you're a grown-up, and I hate to be like this, but it's not actually cool to skip out on your engagements and things that you promised that you were going to do.
People,
is it?
Really don't like that. It's not a good long-term strategy. And it's troubling that Jaqui's learning from these people.
No, exactly. And of course she loves that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we're going to have to... The bug catchers who have stuck around, I hope you've learned something about the Babysitter's Club, and I appreciate you. The non-Tanner head bug catchers, who the Josh heads out there, have stuck around for some Babysitter's Club content.
Fjell stands.
The Fjell stands. Okay, that's great.
Yeah. I don't know how many there are. We've never gotten, we don't know, we don't have the polling data to suggest if there are more Tanner heads or Fjell stands.
That's so good. I don't have one for me. God, now I feel terrible.
Have a flock? Because it's Jack Shepherd.
The flock, so you have a flock is awesome.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome. Oh, that's so good. Okay, so for the Fjell stands and the flock who are still here, we are going to talk about the Pokeverse in our next segment after a break. But I want to ask you, because this is, you know, it's your virgin lips here that we're all kind of watching with our eagle eyes. And is that an okay turn of phrase to say? I think it is.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you would like to say, and I will say it again with those virgin lips, about your experience, your first experience with the Great Babysitter's Club before we move on?
Honestly, maybe this is the direction Peter takes the books he writes, but I thought it was a easy but like more complex read than I would have thought. There's like a good amount of story. There's good character development. I'm being dropped into this with, what is this, the 87th book? Absolutely no experience. And I was able to figure out a fair amount about all of the people in the Babysitter's Club universe. So
yeah,
I thought it was less just like you're dropped into it and they don't explain anything. And the characters are interesting. Like there's good girls, bad girls, everywhere in between.
Yeah.
Got Brew Doggy.
Something for everybody.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
It's a crazy book to be parachuted into.
I thought it was going to be, I would understand less. I think you made a smart choice because it does, it's in this quote unquote great divide, which I also was like, I think it's funny they have a bunch of little like nicknames for things. I presume that like she called something like the Big Chill, which was like,
oh yeah,
when Stacy's parents got divorced, I think. And then like she has a hideous hair flattening helmet that she has to wear when she bike rides. I was like, I like this little nickname thing.
It's
do
cool
that too.
Yeah, she calls her getting dressed in the morning Stacy's daily trauma.
Yes, SDT. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
So I thought it was actually a good choice to be like dropped into it.
I think that's what they call venereal diseases in England. SDTs.
Oh yeah, I think so. Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you liked it. Well, let's take a quick break, and then we haven't even told folks what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about a classic movie that is called a lot of different things, but it's mostly called Pokemon 3, the movie.
Yeah, the Pokemon movies have very confusing naming conventions, and this is Pokemon 3, colon, the movie.
The movie, yeah. Yeah. All right, I'm looking forward to that. Let's take a quick break.
Great.
Everybody, it's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game, June's Journey.
I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's journey. A game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which, to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner.
Welcome back to Babysitter's Experience.
Hell yes.
Which Jack and I were just talking about how it's an elevated, curated sort of like premium level, you know?
Yeah.
You have to work to get into the experience.
Anyone can get
into
a club.
Club is low level.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So for this portion, which is why I'm kicking it off, we're going to be talking about Pokemon 3, the movie.
The movie.
And in experience share, normally what we're doing is playing the games and recounting the experience gym by gym. Mm-hmm. But because we had a limited amount of time and prep.
I don't have a Game Boy.
And Jack doesn't have a Game Boy. I didn't want to bring that up, but Jack doesn't have a Game Boy. So that's a big problem. But also, the games take a long time to actually get through to any extent that you would be able to really comment on it. And we're not the Fabulous Four. We're not Jack Kui. Like, we're not going to be using emulators. We're not criminals, you know?
They could be Poke trainers, couldn't they? Jaqui and Andy. I'm trying to find like definitely points of confluence between these universes, and that seems like they have the same vibe as some of these trainers.
They'd be in Team Rocket.
I want to tell you my experience with Pokemon, which is just we did record an episode of our podcast where I made Tanner experience something from the year 1998, and he made me experience something from the year 1998.
Oh, and yeah.
I think I made him listen to an REM album. And then he was like, just play this like Pokemon Red versus Blue. And it was like, my thing took me like, I enjoyed it for what it's worth, but it was like 22 hours.
Yeah.
But that's the extent. And so what I did, I got real invested in a Nidoqueen.
Oh yeah. Nidoqueen's great.
Yeah,
that's my preference to Nidoking. I think Nidoking is better.
Okay. Anyway, that's basically my experience. And now also, Pokemon 3, the movie, and it has like a subtitle sometimes and sometimes not. That's called like Legend of the Unknowns or something like that.
Yeah, it's very confusing. It's either Emperor of the Crystal Tower, Entei,
yeah,
or Spell of the Unknown, Entei.
And I watched this with my human child.
Oh, really? What did he think?
He's 3 years old. And yeah. his mostly what he's watched, well, exclusively what I know what he's watched before this has been like 1970s Disney movies.
Right. Yeah.
And Sesame Street. And so
you're raising him right. Yeah.
His mind was good. Fucking blown by this. Just completely blown. His mind was entirely blown. He was like, what are they? I was like, I don't know, man. He's like, is that a dinosaur? What the fuck? He loved it. And then so he has a Pokemon that I purchased in Japan as a gift from my wife before
great.
The child existed. And it's the Meow guy.
Like a plush but or...
it's a plush, little, and it's the Meow yeah. guy. And
Meowth.
My wife named it... I imagine this is probably sacrilege to bug catchers. My wife named it Miss Kitty Fantastico, which is a Buffy the Vampire Slayer reference. Oh. And I...
It's, that's right in our sweet spot. I mean, I haven't watched Buffy, but I had in season two, I named all of my Pokemon after the OC characters.
Okay. Oh, so you're allowed to name it something else. Okay.
Oh, and yeah, I'm in particular usually naming them in weird ways.
But he was, I brought this now, like it was one of his favorite toys as like a little baby, and it's become, it's like velveteen rabbit-ized where it just like kind of got forgotten and thrown in a box. But I brought it out after the movie, and I was like, that he was like, that's not a Pokemon. I was like, it's a Pokemon. And he was like, fuck, dude. And now he's like taking it to bed. And so he's a Poke boy now.
Bug catcher in training.
Yeah.
I've been, I have nephews on my husband's side, his sister's kids. And I've been waiting the oldest one is also, I think, 3. And I've been waiting for, like, when can I start indoctrinating them with Pokemon? I think 3 is probably about there. I did give him a Pikachu doll a year ago. Yeah. I was like, let's just lay the seeds. Like, here's a little plush. It's very similar. Start getting them thinking about it. Like, what's this thing? And then hit him with the Game Boy. I'm going to try to have them play Red and Blue in a couple of
years. I really
enjoyed
it. This movie was dark.
Yeah.
It's dark. I was worried the child didn't give a shit. He was just like, is that a fucking dragon? Holy shit. Like, there are so many animals, but...
Weird. I haven't seen this one in the experience share where we're in Hoenn. We're in Gen 3, and I wanted to have us watch Destination Deoxys, which is from the generation we're in, which is around, like, 2005. And apparently this one, Pokemon 3, the movie, is the last Pokemon film before Detective Pikachu in 2019 that came out internationally. So the reason we couldn't get any of the other ones streaming is because they just never, nobody has bothered. Which, based on this one, and Jack, obviously, I'm going to love to hear your overview of the plot here. But based on the plot, I'm like, I think it'd be kind of a hard sell after this one for keeping with the mass release in 190 countries or whatever.
So you told me in our email thread that this was rated on some list as the best Pokemon movie.
Yeah, it's, well, and going back to the naming convention, Pokemon the Movie 2000, which is Pokemon the first movie.
Okay.
And the subtitle is Pokemon the Movie, Pokemon the first movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back. Like, it's, the conventions never make any sense for how they title these things. That one is like the best one. But of any of the sequels, this is the only one that that was being ranked as like, this one's good. I was like, wow. Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes disagrees, for what it's worth.
What does Rotten Tomatoes give it?
I like to go in clean with something like this. If I'm going to watch it anyway, I don't need to know what Rotten Tomatoes does, but like whatever app I used to watch it was like, just so you know, Rotten Tomatoes thinks this is 21%.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Not my boy, though.
Ebert's not giving this one 2 thumbs up.
Shall I try to tell you what I think happened in this experience? And I would describe it more as an experience than a film.
Yeah, it's definitely an experience. Yeah, I'd love to hear your interpretation.
There's a man called Spencer Hale.
Yes.
He's a professor. One of the greats. I related to him. He seems like he's like one of these like ivory tower dudes. Like he's not like Ash Ketchum, who's like out in the wild catching Pokemon and throwing Pokemon and doing all the stuff you do with Pokemon. He's like studying the tomes and the archives to like learn about like fucking ancient Greek Pokemon.
Yeah, he's not down there on the streets like talking to random people.
Yeah. So he's a real deal. He's an academic, and I like that about him. He's a little weird with his daughter.
I thought so. Yeah.
He's a little weird with his daughter. He like goes away for a day, which it sounds like there's no mom, so it's like a little weird to go away for a day, even just a day, because your daughter's like 5 years old. You can't. I don't care if you're like the best professor in fucking Poketown. You like can't leave your daughter alone. But then she's like, oh, don't go, daddy. And he's like, remember me in your dreams.
I'll be back just as soon as I can. Keep me close in your dreams.
Yeah, and he just like leaves her with like, so they're very moneyed. He's a
They have a
very
big castle.
Successful professor, and they're located in Greenfield, in Johto, which is like the Gen 2 region. Gold and silver region.
You've lost me with a lot of what you're saying, but I'm nodding along. Yes.
Yeah. I'll try not to lose you.
I'm sure
that's
the
just basically
know what
to say.
Yeah.
This town doesn't exist in the games, and that's frequent with the anime. But this guy, Greenfield, seems like it's a suburb out in. It's a suburb of like a giant city, like they're all rich. It's like the English countryside kind of a thing. And he's got a big castle on a hill, but he's still leaving his daughter with just like unclear.
They have like just leaves
butlers and shit. He's kind of like, I'm out.
And he goes to a pokey cave, and then a bunch of eyes come out of the pokey cave.
Yeah.
And they're eyes and like eyeballs. And my 3-year-old son was like, what the fuck is that? And I was like, I don't know, child. What have I introduced you to? It was pretty scary. Like a swarm of eyeballs came out of the pokey cave, and then Spencer disappears into the multiverse.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, into a place between worlds.
Definitely, yeah.
And this is in Babysitter's Club. There's
he
a multiverse
gets sucked
aspect
into a laptop.
To it as well. Yeah, he gets basically sucked into a laptop. And so I'm familiar with multiverse from Babysitter's Club. We have that too. The Babysitter's Club mysteries take place in a parallel universe to the regular Babysitter's Club. And there are also people who can walk between our world and the world of the Babysitter's Club, such as Keanu Reeves, who makes a number of appearances in Babysitter's Club books. So I know this stuff is
the
easy.
The actor, just straight up, he's
walks
in
into a Babysitter's Club book. Yeah.
Like,
I mean, they talk
he's
about
on... They're watching the Matrix or the
yeah, exactly.
Or is he's around?
Well, he's assumed to be around. They talk about him in the books, so
he's
he exists in that world. So yeah, I'm just saying, I just want you to know that I'm comfortable with this. I didn't blink.
Great.
I was like, oh, okay,
you could follow.
It's a different universe. He gets sucked into a different universe. Two big dongs grow out of his castle, right?
Mm-hmm.
The castle becomes enveloped, and two big crystal dongs grow out of it. And then the daughter, and this is key, her name is Molly. She's 5 years old. I think she has face blindness because her dad goes missing. Like, the butler is like, Molly, your dad is dead. And then a fucking lion with no nose and a handlebar mustache shows up, and he walks in on all fours. And she's like, Dad? And then that's her dad. This is a fair and honest recounting of this film. That the lion is her dad now. This is what happened in the movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Ente goes,
I'm not putting any spin on the ball.
I think his first line is like, I am Papa. I'm Papa Ente. I'm your Papa now.
Are you my...
I am Ente.
Yeah, I'm your papa now. And she's like, hey, daddy. And then fucking cut to Ash Ketchum, who like just like hangs out with his mom, Delia.
Right.
He just like chills with his mom. I thought it was his friend until I context clues alerted me to the fact that that's Delius's mom.
Well, speaking of, you know, Babysitter's Club, like how old is anyone? This is also like Delia looks the same age as Misty, yeah, who is with Ash, is the red-haired girl, okay, who's with Ash and Brock. They look the same age, and Misty is like in the anime at least supposed to be, you know, fucking 12 or something,
right?
And Ash is like 11, and then Delia is his mom, and it's just like,
yeah,
no, it doesn't make any sense that like anyone is this age. That's like a problem with all the Pokemon games, is like everyone just sends their 10-year-olds out onto the streets and you just maybe never see them again because they want to be a Pokemon trainer.
I'm now realizing that our fanfic that we read, the main character, yeah, in the fanfic is called Misty, and the main character in the Babysitter's Club is called Christy. And she does say at some point, Misty's great idea.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the first Babysitter's Club book. And I feel like we have been deeply unfair to this fucking piece of genius. And it is the case that as we start to share knowledge with each other, as we start to experience share, if you will,
yes,
we're coming to a place where we can appreciate the document that brought us together in the first place, the Pokesitter's Club.
So Misty is the stand-in for Christy. Yes.
Misty is Christy, and I didn't know that because I didn't catch any names here. We were brought into the world of Ash Ketchum, who even I, a neophyte, that is a name that is hallowed.
Yeah. It's Mount Rushmore of our, yeah, cultural consciousness.
I know who Ash Ketchum is. But they get his mom, and then so we go back to the face blindness, and Delia...
Oh, and it's because Molly wants a mama.
Mama's wants like, where's mommy? Where's my mommy? It's implied that her mommy is long dead, I think.
Yeah, this is I actually looked this up because I was like, or when I was getting the summary here, I saw that apparently in the Japanese version, the mom is explicitly hospitalized, like she's sick, but in the, okay, dub, the American version,
they just cut that out.
They imply that like she also was like sucked into her laptop or whatever, like the unknowns took her.
That's but fucking crazy.
Because American audiences couldn't handle it.
Couldn't handle it.
So it's not like the mom is dead or like divorced. It's that
she's also in this liminal space between worlds.
Yeah, supposedly.
She's in the otherverse. She's floating endlessly throughout the otherverse that is created by her imagination and legendary Pokemon such as Entei. Delia shows up in the otherverse and Molly is like, hey, Mom.
You called me Mama.
Yeah, and I'm Molly, remember?
Molly.
Mama.
Yeah. This is my mom. That was also really weird. She does have face blindness. Like, yeah, she doesn't bat an eye. She's like, oh, it's my mom. It's Mommy,
hey,
right,
Mom,
here. Yeah.
My dad is this hipster lion, and like I haven't skipped a beat. And now my mom is Delia.
Yeah.
And then so I have a number of pokey questions for you, but I don't know whether that's the best use of our time. Shall I ask you some pokey questions? Do you want to ask me some pokey questions? What, or we can maybe go back and forth in a lightning round? Because that's and yeah, then Ash and the gang have to try to stop this, and also there are the R&R guys who are
Team Rocket,
two guys who hang around with a cat in a cat balloon, and they seem like they're bad because bad guy music plays whenever they're in the show, but they don't do anything bad.
They try,
and they're in fact
they're
quite nice,
bumbling idiots. Okay. All they want is they try to steal Pokemon. They specifically want Ash's Pikachu. Because they think the Pikachu is, like, extremely powerful.
They don't mention it. They're mostly just helpful. And also, can I raise a point of order?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't the whole fucking point of Pokemon that you steal other people's Pokemon?
Normally, you're capturing them out in the wild. there are actually the game we're playing through right now, Pokemon Colosseum, on Experience Share, is a game where you steal Pokemon. But okay. Normally in the games, they're like your pets. And
is it considered
so you can't
untoward?
Hurl Pokeballs at them and like steal them. It's very uncouth. Yeah, you can't
okay.
do that.
Okay. So that's why they're bad. But it's right. not said in the movie. If this is your first kind of real foray into the Pokeverse, as is the case for me,
yeah.
this movie, you're like, these guys kind of signal as bad, and they've got a bad cat who like breaks, who's like fucking Deadpool and like breaks the fourth wall all the time.
Yes, yeah.
In a pretty amusing way.
Sometimes it's better not to ask questions.
Hey, Jesse, I got a question that's better I shouldn't ask. Do you think we're going to get a bigger pot in the next movie?
But they don't do anything bad and, in fact, are quite helpful.
Yeah, and this one, it's interesting because they actually do help them out a couple of times because everyone is being trapped in this, like, crystal kingdom that the unknown yeah. are creating.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, we're not going to be able to get this Pikachu this time. So, like, we have to just get out of this fucking, like, hellscape
yeah.
that everyone is trapped in. I mean, you're speaking of the bad cat, Meowth. I'm curious for my first question. I think
yeah.
I like lightning round.
Let's do back and forth. You ask me one, I'll yeah. ask you one. Yeah.
Given that you have very little experience with Pokemon, I'm curious if either in this movie specifically or historically, do you have a Pokemon that's particularly appealing to you? Do you have like a favorite Pokemon, or was there anyone in this one that you were like drawn to?
I love that fucking cat. That was
yeah
fantastic. I don't know if that's like it's lame to be into Meowth, but I liked that cat a lot. He was cool as hell.
No, the character is one of the, in the anime in particular, is one of the best characters because he's got this backstory where, like, obviously normally Pokemon can't talk, but he can because he was like a street cat, and he, in the town he grew up in, he fell in love with this fancy, it's like Aristocats, this fancy okay. cat, and he never thought he'd be able to get her attention unless he was able to differentiate himself from like everyone else. So he taught himself how to talk
that
in order
beautiful.
To impress her. But
that
then she thinks
beautiful.
He's like a freak and still kicks him to the curb. It's sad.
Oh, okay.
He has a tragic backstory.
There's real pathos there. I'm just learning yeah. from you now that he's the only one who can talk. For some reason, I didn't like,
yeah.
I didn't grok that. Now that you mention it, none of the other Pokemon talk.
Well, Entei can, I guess, but he was
oh,
an
yeah.
illusion this whole time.
Entei is an illusion from the other verse.
Yeah.
And then my child, Cyril, got so excited when the big dragon came out.
Oh, Charizard. Yeah.
Charizard saves the fucking day. And this is actually,
classic.
Maybe this will be my first Poke question for you. Why doesn't he just always use the dragon? Because like all of his like dumb yeah. Pokemon get their fucking asses kicked. Like they're fighting with Entei and Molly. There's so many names, but like the girl like fancies herself a Poke fighter, and so a lot of the action of the movie is she's like, "Now we'll fight," and then it's the thing that I'm familiar with from playing the one game where she's like she throws out a Pokeball
right.
and it just like fucking obliterates them. Because they're like,
oh,
here's
yeah.
my tiny penguin.
Well, if water won't work, then I'll use fire. I choose you, Cyndaquil.
And she's like, okay, I have a sea monster. Like, fuck you. But like, why doesn't he always do the dragon? Because the dragon's big and scary and like can kind of hold his own. That's my pokey question for you.
Oh, that's a great question. It actually yeah. touches on something that was very controversial in the anime and something that I, as a kid, really hated, and it made me, like, disrespect Ash and, like, not... It was, like, a turning point in the series where I was like, this show's fucking bullshit. Like, this guy
yeah.
never evolves as Pikachu. He's always losing. Like, he sucks. And there's an episode
yeah.
where... And this... So this connects with... Like, the anime and the movies, for the most part, do, you know, have connective... narratives.
Yeah.
So his Charizard was his best Pokemon. It's like his best Pokemon for a long time. But in the anime, at one point, Ash runs into people in the Characific Valley who okay. train Charizards, and his Charizard wouldn't obey him. like, because it didn't respect him and it was, like, over-leveled, which is a thing in the games. Like, you can have Pokemon that if they get too high, they just will disobey you. Yeah. And so he leaves the Charizard with these people, but the Charizard had been coming around to Ash. And I was like, yeah, keep the Charizard and you just keep training like it's your best Pokemon.
Yeah.
It's like a pseudo-legendary. He leaves it in this valley with these people. And that's where it's coming from. Like in the movie, there's like that news bulletin and these the trainers are like watching it. And Charizard is like watching the TV too. And then that's where Charizard like comes from to go save the day.
Okay. But yeah, it was presented as like, oh, this fucking dragon's saving the day now. And I was like, well, if you had that in your back pocket all the time, but he didn't. So you have answered my Poke question,
right,
sir.
It's Ash's Pokemon normally. But he like gave it away. He gives away his best Pokemon. That was always my fucking problem with this guy.
That's fascinating, and I have hit on something. Would you like to ask me a Poke question?
So we touched on how I was pretty impressed with the character, the layers of characters, the complexity of the plot in Babysitter's Club number 87. I'm curious, what did you think about the overall structure of the plot in Pokemon 3, the movie? How does it compare in terms of storylines and layers to a typical Babysitter's Club book?
it's fuck. That's a good question, and it's not. It doesn't. I'm gonna be honest.
They didn't. In what way?
They didn't do that. Yeah. Did they? They were like, it's like kind of like when my boy tries to tell me a story. It's like, once upon a time there was a dragon, and then what? Right. And then the fucking castle happened, and then there's this fucking Pokemon trainer, and then like there is not. It's not layered. I did like the concept. I'm going to do a compliment sandwich here, and what would Tanner and I like to call an open face compliment sandwich.
Oh, I just call those a shit sandwich.
Actually, this is an open face shit sandwich because I did an insult first, and now I'm going to have a nice filling, and I probably won't close it. But like, the concept, they do this interesting thing with the unknowns. The unknowns,
which
is
are
a
the
thing.
Eyes, yeah.
They're the eyes, and they're like, I looked it up, and it's like, sometimes it's written as unknown, unknown, and sometimes it's weirdly written as unown, own.
Yeah, which is how they're spelled in the game.
And they're this kind of mysterious thing, and it's like, ownership is like obviously a vexed question in the Pokeverse. Right. You know, like Ash makes a point at some point in this video novel of saying like, hey, the thing about me is that my Pokemon are my friends.
Yeah.
All of my Pokemon are my friends. We all work together like a family.
Which is like, and it's like seen as remarkable. Like the other people are like, what? Your Pokemon are your friends, not your fucking slaves. And like, but they still like, it's still the dynamic between Ash and these Pokemon is still not necessarily like a one-to-one friendship dynamic. Like he puts them in fucking balls when he's tired of them, you know?
Right.
So this like idea of ownership, and then there's like the big bad, like the scary thing is this unown.
Right.
Right? It's like lack of ownership, and that's like what causes the tension.
That's interesting.
Like what puts the universe in tension and like creates this rift that needs to be solved. And I did think that was pretty fucking fascinating. And it's like, if you think about like what the unowns are represented as, it's their eyes, right?
Yeah.
And an eye can be an eye that you see with, but it could also is I, the first person singular. It's I, and it's like this idea of selfhood.
Holy shit.
And to solve the movie, you have to like, normally Tanner doesn't let me get this far for what it's worth, but I'm really grateful.
I'm loving what I'm hearing but you know, I was a history major and I loved my AP English class, so I'm enthralled.
I literally never got to the end of a point this long, and I'm really grateful for it, and I want to thank you for it. I interrupted myself, but like to solve the like puzzle of the movie, they have to like make this leap between the self and the other. Like Molly has to say like like the anti is like if you believe in me, I am.
Right.
I was born of your dreams. If you believe in me, there is nothing I cannot do.
And she like makes this leap of faith where she's like, I do believe in you. Like, I only have my own individual experience. I only have my eye, but like, I'm going to make a leap of faith and I believe in you. And like that moment is the moment that like solves the universe. So I thought it was interesting that they have this issue where it's like unknown and it's also unown. And it's like this question of ownership and self-ownership. And that was just like fucking wonderful. And it makes up for the fact that the movie is just like a concatenation of like random fucking scenes.
I mean, I feel like you just did it a lot more justice than it deserves. It's like a metaphor for her, like, Molly, like, who are you when you don't have your mama or papa around, you know? Like, what do you believe in?
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
They should have used that as part of the marketing. This movie would have done a lot better.
It's powerful.
Yeah. Because otherwise, it's kind of a fucking mess.
Yeah, it is a mess. It's a mess. Is my other.
It's
my
a
other
visual smorgasbord. I always say that smorgasbord now because of the fucking pop up in Williamsburg. Smorgasbord. A smorgasbord of visual effects. But yeah, the story, you got to make those leaps. That's where it is. The heart.
You got to look deeper. I'm aware that we're running out of time, but I do want to ask you another pokey question.
Go for it.
And it's more of a pokey comment, honestly.
Lay it on me, String Bean.
Email us videos in the Pokeverse. Doesn't that make you think?
Yeah, I was fascinated with... I actually had a note about this as well, because also I thought it was cute in the beginning where Spencer, Molly's dad, the famous professor, gets an email, and it's if you notice this, the bird, it's a Pidgey. Pokemon, and it like flies in on the screen, and it makes its like chirping sound, and it's like, you've got mail, basically. And I'm like, oh, that's like a funny little like twist on the real world. But the email is super advanced. It's all videos and like interactive.
But wouldn't that be I'm not going to argue with the future. I assume Pokemon is set in our future.
Yeah, the timeline is complex and debated, but it's most likely in the future parallel universe.
Okay, but that would be bad. Is basically my take. It's like if emails is video, that's actually not good.
That's a nightmare.
Because it's like you can't scan it, you know?
Sit here and like listen to this account manager talk to me. No. Gotta listen to my whole family. Like we already are on Zooms for 5 hours a day. Like I can't have this in my inbox too.
Yeah. I mean maybe the Pokeverse is a dystopia.
Pokemon world.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get these little sweeties running around as your pets, but then also you got email videos and you got unknown that can just suck you into laptops and create palace plagues upon the land. And
it's not good.
Wow.
We're going to have to leave soon, but I have one thing that I really did want to bring up with you, and I imagine you must have talked about it on your show before, but is Brock, this is a question for you. Is Brock a pickup artist? Is that his thing? He's like a PUA dude.
And we've covered him because we've watched a couple of episodes of the anime as well as Pokemon, the movie, the first movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back. I can never even remember the order. Brock is... misogynist and definitely pickup artist. And
can I say a few things?
Arguably canceled.
This week, no, he feels canceled to me, and I actually want to pat myself on the back for noticing this. Here, he starts off and he says this to a human woman, so it's not great, but it's better than what comes later.
I'm Ash Ketchum from Palette, and I want to be a Pokemon master.
I'm Brock from Pewter City, and I want to be your boyfriend.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, that's pretty common. He's a gym leader, so he really tries to, like, bank on that cachet where he could just, like, go around and, like, everyone is going to want to, like, bet him or whatever. But usually he is rejected, which is refreshing. Like, the joke is sort of that he is always rejected, and you shouldn't behave like this.
Molly, at some point, uses her imagination to imagine herself as being teenage Pokemon trainer, and does look like that. And Brock says to her, what's a Teddy Ursa? That's a Pokemon?
Yeah, it's a little, like, teddy bear-looking Pokemon.
Okay.
Yeah.
A Teddy Ursa, huh? Figures a cute Pokemon trainer'd have a cute Pokemon.
I noted this, too.
And then later he says,
hey, I made you laugh. That's my first victory today.
And again,
very troubling.
She's a young girl. And so that's not
good. I think this was among the worst I've seen Brock at, where it's like, this is illegal. Canceled.
It's not good. Oh, and speaking of illegal, and this is another pokey question for you, and it's not fair because you're technically, it's your turn to ask me one, but what's the deal with the pokey cops?
Officer Jenny?
Officer like Jenny. There's Officer Jenny, and then like some pokey cops are in it, and they're just like driving around in their police cars, but it doesn't appear that there's any law of the land. Or that they do anything.
No, their suggestion is like, let's get some bulldozers over here and just try to like bulldoze the crystal plague. Like,
yeah, it goes terribly.
They're useless. I mean, you find that most of the characters in the anime, which is, I guess, kind of like the game as well, are like NPCs. You know, they're not really getting anything done. Okay. Like, Officer Jenny, who Brock hits on very frequently, you might imagine, acts authoritative, but like I can't think of anything she's actually gotten done.
She's never accomplished anything. Okay.
No, it's a lawless land. Like all the regions, it's just chaos.
Yeah.
There's every single game has a different criminal syndicate.
Okay.
So there's always like every region has its own like seedy underbelly that like runs part of it.
Yeah.
So the cops are defunded.
Somebody fucking defund those fuckers. Good. Defund Officer Jenny.
Yeah. Defund Officer Jenny. They need some new new law, new kind of enforcement here.
Okay. It feels like it might be time for us, sadly, to go.
Yeah.
That's a shame. I would even like to thank the Tannerheads who have stuck around. Honestly, I would especially like to thank the Tannerheads for sticking around because it means you gave us the benefit of the doubt.
We really appreciate that.
I'm not going to normally I like plug a bunch of shit, but like everyone gets a break from that, I think, on my end.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Fucking like and subscribe to Experience Share for the love of God. How many times have Josh and Tanner told you to do that? Just fucking do it.
I just need to get a tattoo at this point. Yeah, it's if you want to check out Experience Share, you just go to expsharepod.com or on any social media.
Yeah, and new Fjell stands, go to expsharepod and fucking subscribe. And new members of the flock, get over here. We've got hundreds of episodes of the Babysitter's Club. And at this point, honestly, it's a great point to dive in because we've run out of books and we're just talking about whatever comes to mind.
The final evolution of that will be the final evolution of Experience Share as well. I mean, we got a finite amount of Pokemon games, so yeah.
I'm delighted that we have brought our two podcasts together. Totally. If this is your first time experiencing one or the other, go check it out. It's good to support the work that everybody does. And look, we did it without Tanner, and that is something to be proud of. We didn't need him. It turns out it took the fucking
some kind of
training wheels
commendation
off finally.
Yeah.
This week we read a novel that was called Babysitter's Club number 87. Stacey and the Bad Girls. We kind of skimmed and maybe unfairly maligned a perfectly good fanfic that was called The Pokey Sitters Club. Just to
I take
kinda
back
ease
what
you guys
I said
into
about
this.
It. I think it's a little more developed than I thought.
And we watched a film called Pokemon 3, the movie. Not Pokemon the Movie 3. Not Pokemon 3. Pokemon 3...
The movie,
and that's what they call it. And who am I to say that it's wrong? And I think we learned a lot about.
I think audiences did.
Ourselves and each other and Pokemon and the Babysitter's Club and so much more. And do you have this week? I have been Jack Alexander Shepard,
and I have been Josh Connor Fjellstad. middle names.
Thank you for using parallel construction.
Yeah.
That Tanner never does it. Never fucking does it. He doesn't respect it. Do you guys have a sign-off that you do?
I say smell you later.
Okay, that's cool.
I just say simply the rival in red and blue always says smell you later, and he's an asshole.
Here's what we can do, and it's from the Pokemon, and it's what they say at the end of the Pokemon 3, the movie, and this can be our sign-off for when it's you and me, and right. when it's the babysitter's experience. Thank you for listening. We battle hard, but we always stay friends because we all love Pokemon.
God, that's true.
Isn't it?
Like I'm going to need a moment. Beautiful.
All right, bye, everybody. Next week, who the fuck knows what's going to happen on our various feeds, but something, probably.
Something. Until then, smell you later.
Trick in Pokemon.
Do you know what the dragon is called?
Yeah.
What is it called?
Let me check.
Charizard?
Charizard!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.